Good morning, everyone. Do my best to do two things, get through my entire presentation and leave plenty of time for questions. So here's my disclosure statement. I haven't received any financial benefits from some of the folks I'll be talking about. As a matter of fact, I'm a thorn in their side, and so that's probably why. So this is just kind of a general outline of what I want to cover, starting with raising awareness. And I want to make it very clear that in many instances, what we see or what we think of as common knowledge isn't in some of the communities that we're working with. And so it's that awareness in terms of what's appropriate, what people should expect to see in their local markets. I'm going to also talk about our Neighborhood Food Watch campaign and how we're kind of documenting what's going on in stores in Los Angeles and other areas, and then kind of end with where we are as a result of some of the things we've learned from the Neighborhood Food Watch campaign. And again, just kind of in terms of appreciation of raising awareness, this idea of the determinants of health, developing a community action plan, and some of the assessments that we've done as a result of it. And I like this picture because I think it makes the point that even though we're spending a lot of time and energy trying to get people to make different kinds of choices, we also have to appreciate there are all these factors that are influencing the choices that people are making. I like to say, before you complain about my choices, you need to understand my choice set. And that's really what we're talking about, to begin to appreciate the ability to make healthy choices very significantly by community, and just raising awareness of that generically, I think, is part of what we're doing. And again, the whole issue of policy, the environment, economics, all of those things are impacting what happens when people leave their homes and go try to find food. Because again, smoking may be discretionary, but eating is not. All right? And so this is small print, but I want to kind of talk about the phases of the African American Building a Legacy of Health Project. And it goes back to 1999 when the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention basically asked the question. Again, we've invested lots of money in terms of changing individual behavior, and we haven't seen tremendous gains. We've seen some gains, but what other things may be going on? And so this, the REACH 2010, which basically says, can we invest in community partnerships in such a way that those communities can develop kind of their own agenda in terms of what they would like to do in their communities, and then kind of fund some of those initiatives. And so in California, or in Los Angeles in particular, the Community Health Council convened several different players, everything from community-based organizations and faith-based organizations, public sector agencies, for-profit entities, in terms of if we could do anything to deal with transforming South LA around cardiovascular disease and diabetes, what could we do? And so those agencies developed a community action plan that was subsequently funded by the CDC, which basically had kind of three main objectives: to recreate community norms through education and prevention, this whole idea of economic parity through community development, which is what the Neighborhood Food Watch falls under, and this whole idea of policy and institutional change. Someone mentioned sustainability earlier. I mean, we got invested in policy very early because we recognize policy, you may not like it, but the reality is it changes the rules of the game overnight. And so we also invested in how can we use our efforts to change policy policymakers' kind of decisions about some of these issues. And we're now kind of in round three with the REACH US grant in terms of, again, we've got funding through 2012. And so this is kind of the study areas. The white boxes are the zip codes that we're working in South LA. The gray boxes are the zip codes that we're working in West LA, West LA being more affluent, more Anglo, the target area being more low income, moderate income, and also more people of color. One of the things that we did around this issue of economic parity, we wanted to be able to document some of the differences. So the first few years of the project involved detailed assessments of markets, physical activity sites, and also restaurants in South LA and West LA, because again, we're trying to take what we consider or what we believe to be differences and make them more visible. And so we did the collections, and again, we found very early on that there were significant differences between what was going on in these venues in South LA and West LA. And part of what we did was use that information to kind of move community residents, but also the elected officials. And so community organizations were trained to do the assessments. And so instead of having graduate students in the field, we were always concerned about community capacity building. And so we've trained a whole host of community residents to do the assessments so they can, develop their own research skills, if you will, in terms of making sure that they become full partners in the project. When we first got involved in South LA, it was very common for people to talk about drive-by research, and that was basically people coming into the neighborhood, collecting all of this data that had very little impact on what the lives of the people in the neighborhood. And so we took a very different approach. We want to build community capacity, so again, a lot of training, a whole host of different partners, and again, using that data to kind of mobilize and engage a whole host of stakeholders in transforming what was going on in South LA. And taking that data, those differences, and using them in multiple ways. We use them in letters to our elected officials and to other community-based organizations. We use them in kind of one-on-one conversations with a whole host of stakeholders, community meetings, hearings. We've done a whole host of things just to make it clear that when we talk about differences, contrary to what may be said in many camps, it's not just a figment of our imagination. The differences are real, and those differences we believe have consequences for the health of people in those neighborhoods. And now I want to talk specifically about the Neighborhood Food Watch, which is kind of the most recent iteration of the work. So, initially, the assessments were very detailed, several pages worth of just, you know, documenting fruits, vegetables, meats, and all those kinds of things in the local market. But what we wanted to do was something different, something with more frequency, and so we came up with a neighborhood checklist, which basically said, every time you go into a grocery store, every time you go shopping for food, take the checklist with you and basically check on whether or not these items are available and whether or not there's expired items, and finally also whether or not there are certain things as it relates to the environment. Was it clean? Was it well lit? Did you feel safe? Those kinds of things. And so we got involved again with some of the, again, going back to the community as partners. We worked with several local churches, and again, in the African American community, it is working through the churches that consistently has paid off for a whole host of research efforts, not just our own, but partnering with the local churches, the neighborhood council, which are kind of governing bodies, local bodies that the LA County has developed in terms of giving citizens a voice in what's going on in particular neighborhoods, so partnering with those, partnering with the public agencies, and particularly the LA Department of Public Health. And the reason that that paid off in a significant way is that they were able to look at the checklist and basically make some recommendations in terms of items that they could actually put an enforceable action on if we found something that was problematic. And so we added those elements as well. And again, not just faith-based organizations, but also community-based organizations. And this is just for those people, again, those folks who were the first round of surveyors for us. Again, this is the African American Building and Legacy of Health Project. So again, the majority of the surveyors are African American, predominantly female. And again, most of them, again, a majority of them, over 50% report their health as either fair or good. And again, that's pretty consistent if you look at the demographics as it relates to LA County more generically. And this is just kind of a behavior question. We know about fruit and vegetable consumptions. Again, the message is eat more fruits and vegetables. And as you can see, as it relates to fruits and vegetables and also physical activity, they are not getting what's currently recommended as kind of standards for maintaining health or diet. And again, just this idea of fast foods, because in addition to looking at markets, again, we're also looking at restaurants as well. So we're also concerned about this issue of fast food, as there's evidence that people are eating more and more of their meals prepared away from home. So we want to get a sense of, again, and we see that, again, significant numbers of people are actually eating at fast food restaurants. Also, this issue of accessibility. We're concerned about what's available, how long does it take you to get there. And again, the majority of people are getting there by car, but we also know that there's issues not just in terms of this may not be my car, but I have access to one. So we're also concerned about that as well. And again, just the majority of people take less than 10 to 20 minutes to get to the stores. But again, the good news is it's 10 to 20 minutes. The bad news is in terms of what that actually gets you. And so this is now the inventory, those checklists that people were doing. And again, we're talking about low-fat and non-fat milk, whole milk, and soy or lactose-free. And again, you'll see that most of the places have those items available. So you've got dairy, you've got poultry, you've got beef. And again, what you see, the majority of stores have those items in place, but you'll also see that there are significant numbers of expired food items in the stores as well, which is a concern for us. And this is now, I've gone from looking at everybody to looking at South LA and other parts of California. And there are, since this, again, going back to the methodology, since people were told to do this every time they went to the markets, we also had assessments from Las Vegas and Atlanta, and we're appreciative of the commitment to the project, but again, we dropped those out because, again, we're still telling the story of California and South LA. And so, again, you'll see significantly higher rates of expired food, dairy, poultry, and beef in South LA as compared to other parts of California. And again, those are significant differences across the board. And so just kind of what can we say about the neighborhood, what we know about the neighborhoods in based on kind of the checklist, and we found more expired food in South LA. We found 34% of the checklist had at least one expired food item. 18% of the checklist recorded basically that all of the items, poultry, beef, and dairy, they found expired food. And so that leads to the question, what do you do when you find expired food? And this is where the policy paradox part of my presentation comes in. Apparently, it's not a policy concern. When we begin to find high levels of expired food in the local markets, we begin to call public health department, consumer affairs, Department of Agriculture, Food and Drug Administration, food nutrition experts, and basically it's no one agency's responsibility to look at expired food in whatever venue it may be found. And so we have now said, since it's no one's policy concern, how do we make it a community concern? How do we develop a strategy such that if we're going to be finding expired food in the markets, what can we do at the local level to begin to raise awareness of some different kinds of options that people may be able to take as a consequence of finding that expired option? And so as a result of the results, we basically conducted a series of focus groups. Instead of the researchers assuming that they knew best what to do next with the data or what to do next as it relates to kind of using the Neighborhood Food Watch as an awareness for community engagement or community mobilization, we held a series of focus groups in terms of trying to get a sense of what would you think would be an appropriate strategy for letting people know that when you saw a manager's special, that usually meant it was going to expire before you got out of the store. And that's okay. Because, again, if you're on a fixed income, it may be okay, but you may have to do it. But at the very least, there should be an awareness of what that really means for you when you leave the store. And so we have focus groups with several. We had four different focus groups with the different audiences. We worked with some of the WIC participants because as they were kind of expanding what was going on in some of the WIC-only stores and what you could buy with WIC vouchers, we want to get a sense of where they were doing their shopping, what might make it easier for them to get on board, the community residents, and also some of our partners. And these are some of the suggestions that they came up with in terms of how we might take the information, which was, again, this ongoing assessment, and also use it as some type of to challenge multiple parties. And the first thing that was recommended was kind of a hotline to report bad food. And so having a place where, again, people could regularly check in and find out what were the good stores, what were the bad stores, because, again, we're not just talking about highlighting the bad guys. We also want to highlight the good guys, too, because if there are kind of food oases in these deserts or with the desert next door, we want to be able to highlight those as well. So a place where you can call in if you find it. We're bringing more partners to the table. I've been talking a lot about the public agencies and the community partners, but we've also been working extensively with several of the local retailers, so we're now talking about getting some more stores in South LA, which is a win for us. But again, more partners, more people who can come to the table and figure out what needs to be done. Because when we started this work, it was consistently a message, it's too hard to work in South LA. And as someone who lives in South LA, I have a fundamental rejection of that premise. And so the issue is, if it's too hard, how can we bring more people to the table to make it easier to work in South LA. So more partners become that, more community presentations, because again, if people don't know that they can challenge what's currently available, then they may not go that extra step in terms of pressing for more. Because again, when we first got into this process, people had very low expectations for what they should have access to in their local markets. I mean, it's things that were basically disgusting, and they said it's better than it used to be. I don't want to know what the floor was, but again, we're trying to bring everybody up. We've been using media attention. We've gotten coverage in several of the local media outlets. We've got some national coverage on the project, because again, it's when people hear about expired food, I mean, that's not part of my normal expectation for when I do my grocery shopping, and so it has generated a lot of press because of that. We talked about the regulatory system. Again, right now it's not in place. I think there are a few places. I think Westchester County has a very aggressive program that not only documents expired food, but basically penalizes vendors or markets when they have those expired options. LA County, again, talking about what would be the eighth largest state in the country, says we can't do something like that, but we're working on it. But they are talking about the importance of talking to the local manufacturers and the local managers, because again, just like they have control in some restaurants, they also, those local managers have some control in terms of what's going on in their particular markets. And again, this is, I'm the first person, I could love to talk more about it, and again, the other partners on the project, and again, this project is funded by the CDC, and I am, so. That's a good question, and I will tell you that the vendors will look at us straight in the face and tell us that that's not the case, but we also have kind of anecdotal evidence that there's still some distribution issues. I don't know if it's necessarily expired food, but it is some evidence that what gets dropped off in a Ralph's in West LA and what gets dropped off in a Ralph in South LA still are different as it relates to quality and also price. Other questions? Yes, in the back. I mean, absolutely. Part of the strategy is to, again, it goes back to that issue of awareness. One of the first presentations that we did on this project a few years ago was entitled Green Meat and Brown Bananas. And we entitled it that way because that's what people were finding, and they were thinking that that was okay. I live in South LA, but I don't have to do all my shopping in South LA, so I'm privileged in that respect. But the senior citizen who has the nasty store next door to the senior villa and doesn't have their own transportation is a captive. And so the question is, you know, how do we empower those folks to basically challenge what's going on in the grocery store? And for some folks, it's a real concern. They may not feel comfortable doing it themselves because they may feel there may be some backlash against them. And so Community Health Council gets a lot of phone calls that report those things. And so again, we become kind of an advocate for kind of going back into and talking about some of those issues. But again, it is the, what we're trying to do is very much bottom up and also top down. We're telling the community that they have the power to ask for something different in their neighborhood. And we're letting the grocers know that we're developing a different type of consumer, and you need to get ready. If you want to continue those current business practices, then we believe that there will be consequences because, again, we're trying to engage people at another level, that kind of empowerment that you're talking about. Yes. Mm-hmm.
When you talk about the community education, part of that might be, this is why, you know, your food, the food's expired, but nobody's buying it. And if the food's bought, then you get more shipments.
Well, my initial response to that is that we have done some consumer preference surveys that are not part of this, and it is very clear that people will leave the community because they can't find what they're looking for. Those people who have the resources to go to 2 and 3 shops. So, personal example, I'm diabetic, and so I go to the store right across the street from my house, I go to the store closer to West LA, and I can get sugar-free Oreos. In my store, closest to me, I cannot get sugar-free Oreos. Same store, same brand, but again, they've made a decision not to bring them into my store. And so every time I go to that store, I say, where are the sugar-free Oreos? Where are the sugar-free Oreos? And I'm going to say it until I see sugar-free Oreos. I mean, you know, everybody has their preferences, so now you know a little bit about mine. All right. Yes.
I worry about the inadvertent negative consequences of adopting the program implicit in your presentation. So let's call it the Dr. Lewis program.
Okay, I like that.
The Dr. Lucan program, which is trying to get corner stores to purchase more perishable foods. Now, what happens when the store owner encounters the Dr. Lewis program and says, fine, I'll get rid of all my perishable foods?
Interesting question, and I guess my initial response goes back to the choices that people make. And until, for me, again, this is again a LaVonna Lewis moment, until the playing field is equal as it relates to what people have access to, then we still have work to do. I will worry about the unintended consequences when they come up, but until we have equality in terms of what happens when I pass the doorstep, you know, we still have a lot of work to do. I don't know about what will happen with option A or option B, but right now the issue is people don't have the option. And so that's my concern. And that's what this work is all about, because people use those big data sets that look at, you know, take a helicopter view of there's a store there, there's a store there, there's a store there. So obviously it must be okay. But the reality is when you enter those stores, they are very different environments. And so that has to be documented as well. So it's not just, again, the spots on the map. It's what's taking place in those spots that we're also concerned about. And again, we're shining light on, again, something that, for me, I think is generally invisible. We assume that my shopping experience, whatever that is shared by other people. And someone has to educate me or challenge me on that. And that's what we're really talking about. Again, if we're concerned, you talked about what's available in the corner stores. In some schools in LA, they've taken some of the unhealthy snacks off the campuses, but all you have to do is go outside and some of the parents are selling some of those same unhealthy options. And so we've got a lot of work to do. Yes, ma'am. Yeah, the reason why I mentioned the public health department is that they told us the things to ask on the checklist that would generate a kind of an enforcement for them, and so we've got that as well. Yes.
There's one more for
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the dollar stores are the ones that are selling these expired foods. I don't know if it's purchasing expired foods or just holding on to it. Like, what are your comments?
There is evidence that the 99-cent stores are actually purchasing expired food at a discounted rate and selling those in the stores. And we do know. We do know that there's Ralph's, there's Albertsons, there's Vons, there's Pavilions, all of those or big stores in, I don't know what the equivalent is in other areas, but there are big stores that are doing this as well. It's not just the local mom and pops, and we do know the difference between a major chain and a local chain and those 99-cent stores. Yes. So I think the response to the store is going to come when they have more competition. And we're very excited about the fact that there should be another 4 to 5 markets coming to South LA in the next 5 years. So we think that will, you know, if you believe in competition, then we think that having those other vendors nearby will also drive their behavior as well. I think part of the issue is that we have seen, I won't talk about the expired food issue, but I do think that they have been more responsive to kind of consumer demands. And you know what I mean in terms of, it used to be when people found something that was yucky on the market, they just left it there for somebody else to pick it up. And now we're taking it to the stores, and we're also kind of getting some of these healthier options that we also want are showing up on some of the shelves as well. I mean, I think when you, that last bullet is we're doing it at the local level, and we're also challenging people to also contact the manufacturers. Again, going further upstream, because again, some people may be very comfortable talking to their manager, less comfortable talking to the manufacturer. But we want to be able to document that we've got people that are doing all of this and more, and kind of talk about the impact of that overall strategy.